I'm Asher Miller.
I'm Rob Dietz.
And I'm Jason Bradford. Welcome to Crazy Town, where the latest Tesla software update installs Alex Jones's voice as the mandatory navigation aid.
Always turn right, you frickin' pedophile!
Quick warning, sometimes this podcast uses swear words.
Language!
Hey guys, I got a little story to share with you from my sort of high school college days.
Ah, glory days, as Bruce Springsteen would say.
Yeah. So I came home after my freshman year of college to live with the parents.
Back in Atlanta.
Yeah, and do some work and stuff. And I had this friend of mine named John who was a year behind me. So he was just finishing his high school career at the time. Mm-hmm. And he and I used to pal around all the time. And one day he says, "Hey, do you want to go to a party?" And I'm like, "Of course, who doesn't want to go to a party at that age?" So we go over to this apartment complex and we go into this guy's house who I'm going to call him Wooderson.
Okay.
Because he's like the character of Wooderson from the movie Dazed and Confused. It was played by Matthew McConaughey, you know.
All right.
Yeah. That was one of his famous lines from there. Like, "Y'all want to take your shirts off?" And yeah. So anyway, Wooderson was way beyond high school, but he was still hanging out with the high school crowd. Yeah. That was his whole
shit. He was like
43.
Yeah.
No, he was more like in his early 20s, right. But still like would always come party with the high school kids.
Yeah, and all these inappropriate jokes about getting with the, you know, "How's the crop of freshmen looking this year?"
Right.
Oh, like, God. Really creepy.
That's gross.
So anyway, we go over to Wooderson's apartment, because this is one of these guys. And for whatever reason, me and John are the first ones over to his house, and we're just talking with him. And these other guys start arriving. And once there's, I don't know, like 8 or 10 guys, they're like, "Should we do it now?" And I'm like, "Do what now?"
Yeah.
And then everybody takes their guns out of their pockets and out of their holsters and out of their bags and lays them out on the table. And it's like, "Yep, it's time for our gun display party."
No way.
And I'm like, "What the?
What?
Where? Like, yeah, exactly."
Did John know that this is what the party was about?
I don't think so. I was pretty damn uncomfortable. You know, even if you like guns.
Because you weren't enough of a man to have a gun.
I guess not. Yeah. And you know, and they're all handguns. I remember the most memorable one was this little .22 with a plastic pink handle. It looked like a toy.
Well, there's a man who's confident.
Right.
Yeah.
Confident in his masculinity.
So I'm kind of like, "I need to get out of here, John. I'm not coming. We got to go." And we decided to escape this party. We went out, and the apartment opens into a courtyard.
Nice.
And
classic.
Yeah, we decided, well, there's some people out here. We don't have to just completely bug out of the party, even though I kind of wanted to. And the next thing I know, this door opens, and this guy walks up and comes right over and starts talking to us. And he's got a belt lashed around his arm, and there's a needle hanging out of his vein.
What the fuck is going on?
I know. I wasn't
good. Is this a normal thing down in Atlanta?
I don't know. I'm a goody-goody. This was not my scene at all. I was like, I don't even know what kind of drugs that was. I was just like, this is, I thought I would have some beers.
It's just his insulin.
Right.
So,
you don't have pen anymore.
The reason I tell you this story of what I'll call the unhinged party is it's kind of a metaphor for what we're doing with Crazy Town and what's happening in the whole world.
Mm.
You know, the idea is here we are in Crazy Town. We're experiencing these cascading crises. You've got climate change. You've got social breakdown. You got biodiversity dying off. And everybody's kind of just like hanging out going, "Well, this is normal." And we're sort of like, "What the hell is going on here?"
Right. A pile of guns on the coffee table. Not normal.
Yeah, I mean, it would probably be more akin to
potato, potato, dude.
Right.
Well, I think, okay, this brings up, yes, I can think of other instances in history where it's bigger than just a party in Atlanta where like whole societies practically just go bonkers. Think about it for yourselves, but I got a story, okay? Did you know that in 1968 in China, there was a mango cult?
Mango cult.
We've talked about the cargo cult before.
Yes.
So
basically, it's like this Pakistani foreign minister is visiting China, and he gives the dear leader Mao Zedong a gift basket of mangoes, and so Mao takes this basket of mangoes, and instead of eating it, he re-gifts it to, what was it called? I'm going to look this up. Oh. The worker peasant Mao Zedong thought propaganda team stationed at Tsinghua University. I don't know if I pronounced that right. I'm sorry. But he basically, he gifted it to this worker peasant Mao Zedong thought propaganda team, which turned it into, which they didn't
eat. They turned it into propaganda.
Well, yeah, they didn't eat the mangoes themselves. Uh-huh. They basically started worshiping mangoes. Like,
what?
Oh, he sacrificed. He wouldn't eat this because he's such a great leader. He cares about the peasants. We won't eat them either. So they preserved them in like wax and formaldehyde. And then they distributed these mangoes around the country and they got paraded around. And all these products started getting sold, like mango bed sheets. And it just people went mango crazy. And you could not eat mangoes, but you had to worship
them. You worshiped them, but you couldn't eat them.
Right. No, they were too valuable. It
reminds me of those papal visits, you know, where the Pope is in this box, sort of glass box, and they're driving around towns. That's what they're doing with these mangoes?
Yes. They were paraded. There was a giant parade in Tiananmen Square with a mango float. And this poor,
mangoes are good.
This poor guy was a dentist. Okay. His name is Dr. I don't actually know his name, but he apparently during a parade, like made a comment that said, I don't know what the big deal is. They look like sweet potatoes. And he was shot in the head.
No.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. He was put on trial.
What?
Yes. For malicious slander. Found guilty, publicly paraded through the town, and then executed with a shot to the head.
What the fuck?
I know. People went batshit crazy about mangoes in China for 1968. Wow. So this is how quickly things can just spin out of control.
Well, okay, so let's not just pick on the Chinese.
No,
okay?
No.
We got to pick on some Europeans too.
Easy,
okay?
It's easy.
So you guys like dancing, right?
I love dancing.
Have you heard about the dancing plague of 1518?
Well, not lately, but I want to talk. She said, my wife's a dancer. I want to tell her about it.
I hope it was dubstep. You know, that's what we've been doing in my household lately.
I don't think they were dubstepping back in 1518. I'm not sure what the dance
was. What was that Irish dancing thing that was hit for a while?
The Irish jig.
No.
River dancing.
River dance.
Yeah. Is it like that?
No, I don't know.
Okay.
All right, tell us this story. Come on.
So there, you know, in this French city, Strasbourg, there was a woman who began dancing in the streets just on her own, and she didn't stop for almost a week. But within a month, something like 400 people all over the city were also afflicted with this urge to dance until they dropped. And drop they did. I'm quoting here from history.com.
It's like the movie Footloose.
Yeah.
Exactly. They dropped of strokes, heart attacks, and exhaustion. The authorities blamed the trance-like state on quote-unquote hot blood and mandated that the afflicted dance day and night to exorcise their demons. They even constructed a stage where they hired dancers and musicians to keep this thing going. And that, of course, led to other people dancing. So it became this whole frenzy, right? And it spread from France to Germany to Holland to Switzerland. Like, it became this dancing plague. Yeah. It became like an infectious disease.
So wait. So people are starting to like drop dead from dancing.
Yeah.
And instead of saying, hey, stop dancing.
You got to get it out of your system. Keep going.
That's right. They had a lot of hot blood, okay?
Yeah, they got to work it out of their system.
Oh, my God.
So let's be honest. Like, we've seen crazes in our own lives.
Sure.
You know, do you guys remember Cabbage Patch Kids?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got a whole storage locker downtown.
Do you?
Yeah.
You're waiting for them to come back into fashion?
Price, yeah.
Yeah. My sister, who's 4 years younger than me, she got completely swept up into this thing, you know, was desperate to get one of these Cabbage Patch Kid dolls. And we were traveling, I think we were in Europe when this was going on. So she was literally dragging us to stores in England to see if we can find them.
Right, because, you're on a European vacation.
Yes,
she wants
exactly.
to buy a Cabbage Patch Kid.
Yeah, so half of our vacation turned out to be looking for a Cabbage Patch Kid doll.
Luckily today, you could just buy NFTs of Cabbage Patch
right.
Kids.
It's a lot better for the environment.
So, I mean, these stories are emblematic of the problem we have. We have this problem of conformity, right? You got to ask the question, why is everybody going along with this mess? Whether it's dancing, mangoes, dropping your gun off at the party to brag. It's pretty nuts. And we've been looking at some ideas around this. So there's a book by a professor named Jeffrey Cohen that's called Belonging. The subtitle is The Science of Creating Connection and Bridging Divides. And the whole premise of this thing is that need for belonging is a fundamental part of human nature. So it's almost like we can't help ourselves but try to fit in because we have such a fear of being ostracized.
Right. It kind of gets hijacked and goes overboard, huh?
Yeah, it's kind of cool. The part of our brain that lights up when we're going to experience social pain is the same part of the brain that lights up when you're experiencing physical pain.
Oh, sure. I mean, people are just as motivated, I think, to alleviate this social pain as they are physical pain, right? Yeah. Like you're going to, if you have physical pain, if it's really intense, you're like, yeah, give me that opioid or whatever. And I think the same thing is true for social pain.
It's interesting because it's not necessarily a bad thing, this desire to belong, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, there's...
Depends what it is, right?
There are organizations and groups. There's a whole institute at University of California, Berkeley, the Belonging Institute, and others that are working on belonging, because we actually have a situation now where people are feeling like they don't belong, right? They're disconnected. Technology's had a role to play in that. And so belonging is actually, it's how we evolved. I think it's probably a big part of our success as a species, right? Is our ability to work together in social groups. Mm-hmm. And when we're disconnected from those, we feel the pain that you're just talking about, Jason. But it's not necessarily a bad thing to have that. Or it's a natural state of ours. So it could be a healthy thing, right? Mm-hmm. Feeling like you belong, I think you could correlate it to health and people's success in school or in work or whatever. Not belonging creates, I mean, it leads to suicide, it leads to drug abuse, it leads to all kinds of things if people are not belonging. But our desire to belong sometimes could lead us to do things that are irrational, right? Yeah. Or because we're trying to conform, we are part of some negative force.
Well, remember the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, the Rajneesh call, that's still going. In India, you can go apparently and still, they're still all around.
Do they have all the Rolls Royces there?
I don't know about that. But you know, when that Netflix series, Wild Wild Country, I remember watching that and thinking to myself, you know, a lot of what's appealing about this Rajneesh thing was that it was taking people who were sort of like kind of anti-consumerism a little bit. They were a little bit on the fringe of society, but intelligent. And instead of saying like, oh, you're a crazy hippie American, you know, it's more like, no, you belong to something bigger and it's better. This is a great movement and and we can create a new society. And so,
gosh, you should have been the leader of that cult, because the actual leader comes across as an utter whack job.
I couldn't figure out what his appeal was because he hardly said anything.
He just looked with big eyes and said stuff like, it's the light leading down from the moon to the sun to the star back to your heart.
That's the one thing I couldn't quite figure out. What was his appeal? But I think it had a lot to do with
this. We found that a lot with cults. Right. Yeah. I mean, when you're on the outside, you're like, what is the appeal?
But I think it was this sense, if you saw what they did, they built this community together and they were like, they were such a tight knit group and they wanted to like help, right? It was very positive. But then they went off the deep end and they started poisoning people.
So I think we could look at cases where people, like in cults or in certain groups, that people, they succumb to the appeal of it, they get taken advantage of and abused or whatever it is. And you can look at those people and say, oh, those are people that feel disconnected. They feel like they don't belong, whatever.
Right.
I think what we are experiencing is society at large acting in ways that are kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And that's actually the norm.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so it's not just these fringe groups that are drawing upon that need. It's like society as a whole.
That's
reinforcing.
Well, this issue of conformity, it's been studied quite a lot, and I love the whole realm of social psychology.
Yes. Let me tell you about one of these most famous studies, right? It was called the Ash Line Study. I mean, it's so well known, but I'll go over it because, you know, not everyone follows this stuff. There was a series of experiments he did. It was, you know, social psychology is what it's, because you see it's psychology in the term, in the context of social situations. And Solomon Ash did this in the 1950s. So imagine you're signing up for this experiment and you're told it's about perception and vision, and you're seated in a room with other participants. And Professor Ash gives you a reference card with a line segment drawn on it. He then gives you a comparison card with a group of line segments like A, B, C. And one of them is the same length as, you know,
the original one.
And you're supposed to like then say, okay, which matches? And what you don't understand, you know, unbeknownst to you, there are every other person in the room is a conspirator with the professor, and they do various tests, right? Sometimes they go along, sometimes they don't, sometimes one goes along, but in the situation where all of the conspirators give the wrong answer, it's more likely that you're going to give a wrong answer, even though in many cases it's obvious.
So the correct answer is line B.
Right.
But everyone going around the circle is saying it's actually line A.
Right.
And line A is like a quarter of the length. And you're like, wait, yeah. What the fuck?
That's and you're going last. So right. You get to hear all these things. Uh-huh.
Now, I wouldn't pick the wrong line. Of course, I would always say what I believe.
Well, what's interesting is like they manipulate it to the extent where, you know, is it an obvious difference or is it hard or,
right.
You know, how many people are in the room with you?
So they tried all these different scenarios.
Yes. Uh-huh. And so basically most people at some point, it turns out that 75% of participants in one of these various permutations of this test, because you would get tested a number of times in each session, 75% of the participants went along with the crowd at least once.
Wow.
But yeah. for each test, it was about a third of the time that someone went along with the crowd. And subjects basically later revealed that they were concerned about facing ridicule. You know, they admitted that they're like, I feel awkward here, you know. Not going along.
That's just like us in Crazy Town. You go to the holiday family party and you start talking about things aren't going so good in the world and you're facing all the ridicule.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, I feel kind of reassured when you say on any given test, maybe only a third of the time do they conform.
Right.
But you're saying if you do multiple tests, 75% of the time, they're going to at least conform once, right?
Well,
and that's a reality of the world that we live in, right? Maybe in one area, you're like, no, that's kind of crazy. I'm not going to do that.
Sure.
But if all of society around you is geared in a way that just reinforces unsustainable, unethical, kind of crazy behavior, it's hard not to succumb.
You get tired. Right? You're distracted at least, or you know, you just don't care so much in this situation. So you can see how eventually.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because Ash, you know, he was onto something by doing these experiments, and I think it's fascinating. But then he kind of carried them forward and did a bunch more stuff, and he came to some sort of generalizable findings. And one of them was that conformity tends to increase when more people are present. So, you know, if you got just one guy putting his gun on the table, you might not put yours out there, but you got three or four guys, suddenly your gun's on the table. You know? He also found that conformity increases when there's uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a really important one because, and what's hypothesized to be going on is that when it's uncertain, you kind of turn to other people for answers. You want somebody to give you some information of that this is the way to go.
This was revealed by when the difference between the reference and the fake lines wasn't as great. You know, that was sort of like, oh, I'm not sure.
But you're right. This is important, I think, for our purposes because we're going into greater and greater uncertainty in my view.
Yeah.
Right?
And people are actively via propaganda generating
Bad answers.
Crazy. Just
out to the conspiracy theorists. You have somebody like Alex Jones stating with absolute certainty some bunch of drivel.
Right.
And people are like, well, I'm uncertain, so this guy must be right.
Rob, it's not all drivel. The thing about harvesting, you know, adrenochrome on the moon from children, that one's real.
Right.
Don't throw out everything because...
Well, that's a point. You got to have nuggets of truth in order for everyone to believe the rest of it.
Right.
So one of the other findings is, and this is important too, is that conformity tends to increase when other members of the group belong to higher social status. So if you're surrounded by people that you think have some high status, watch out, you might conform. And to me, this explains the phenomenon of Donald Trump rising to power and being so popular.
And the mango cult.
But actually,
you know, those mangoes had huge status.
I mean, interesting. You think about that and you apply like the social media lens to this.
He kind of looks like a mango. Like, if you think about
it. You just went down a rabbit hole.
You're talking about Trump or?
Yeah.
A mango crossed with a corn cob with that hair coming out the top.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Sharon.
Lovely.
I was stuck.
You're insulting my former and soon-to-be president. just thinking
president
about—
President for life.
Those three things that you just talked about, right?
Yeah.
More conformity if there's more people involved. More conformity if there's more uncertainty. And more conformity when there are people with higher status, social status, right? So you combine those elements with things like social media, right? And you have these influencers out there with a big reach, and you see all these other people kind of going along, and they're talking about things that are complicated, and they're going to give you simple answers or something like that. It's easy to see why people would just kind of conform with that, right?
Yeah, totally. I think you were about to state some kind of mathematical equation or identity, like conformity with large masses plus conformity with uncertainty plus conformity with high social status equals we're all fucked.
Yeah. equals crazy town.
Yeah.
So in any case, what's the point of all this? Well, this gets us to what we are planning on doing for this season of Crazy Town.
Conforming.
We're conforming. We're going to come in and we're going to share all the ways that we've been wrong this whole time. No, it's the sixth season of Crazy Town, and we've been on a bit of an arc, you know. In the last, number of seasons, we've been focusing on how we got into Crazy Town, right? Like trying to make sense of the world and some of the environmental social crises we're facing. We talked about hidden drivers behind like humanity's predicament. We did talk actually about cognitive biases and other things that have to do with
a whole like bunch of cool behavior. Stuff like feedback loops and things that you wouldn't really, usually when you think, why are we in this mess? You're not thinking, well, because there are positive feedback loops,
So we talked about some of those hidden drivers. We talked about watershed moments in history that brought us, down this path. Last season, we talked about the false prophets who are propagating a lot of the wrong ideas, sort of keeping us in Crazy Town or moving us deeper into Crazy Town. And this season, we want to shift the focus a little bit, right? We want to do something that might be a little hard for us to do. It's a little bit of a challenge for us to do, which is think about not necessarily just the positive, but like, how do we get out of this? How do we escape Crazy Town? How do we break away from like the conformity of the world?
Yeah.
Where we're not just in a place where we either have to conform or feel like we're crazy outliers or outsiders, in the system. And how do we help maybe the rest of the world?
So we're in a straitjacket and we're in a safe, and they just dumped us off of a bridge. And so we're 40 feet down at the bottom of the river, and now we're trying to get out. Is that sort of the situation we're in?
Yeah, I think that works, yeah.
All right.
Okay. And there are guns on the table.
There are guns in the safe.
Okay.
Well, so how we're planning to do this is that each episode, we're going to address one of the isms that's keeping us in Crazy Town. And what do we mean, one of the isms? So relying on Marvin Harris and his cultural materialism, we'll talk more about that in a second, but we're gonna apply that lens to things like capitalism, like consumerism, like industrialism. And the whole idea will be, how do we escape the maw of consumerism.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So let's just talk about what we mean by cultural materialism. And, we've talked about Marvin Harris quite a bit over various seasons of Crazy Town, but I'm just going to review really quickly. So he laid out these three systems that operate, right? Or three levels of structure. There's infrastructure, structure, and superstructure. And
right.
I think because we use these words like infrastructure, we use a lot, and we tend to think of that, oh, that's a bridge, or oh, that's a road, or whatever it is. He means more by infrastructure, he means more like the physical world, right? So it could be infrastructure is actually how our food is grown, And structures are more things like our political systems or the way the economy works or the laws or rules that govern society. And superstructures are more the belief systems,
the
worldviews, the cultural values, those kinds of things.
Yeah, the mangoes.
And it doesn't explain, the entire world, but we feel like it's a useful model to sort of look at the systems and looking at some of the isms that we're talking about and try to understand kind of like how they're operating and also how you might change them. And we actually used Marvin Harris's cultural materialism to actually think about what are some of the isms that we want to get into, right?
I got to say, when I was introduced to this idea, cultural materialism and Marvin Harris, something clicked because you used to think, okay, I want somebody to think differently. I was kind of an activist in the realm of ecological economics, saying you can't have infinite economic growth on a finite planet. So the idea is, I need to go tell people. I have to change their belief system. And then once we do that, we can change the policies.
Right. So ideas are going to drive change.
Right. And then once we change the policies, then we'll change the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
But what Marvin Harris's ideas is that that's kind of reversed. You need to change the infrastructure, and then the policies, and then the beliefs are going to follow. And it was kind of a little bit eye-opening, a little like I was just kind of like, oh, okay. On one level, that doesn't really make it doesn't follow what I had been thinking before. But on another level, it's kind of makes intuitive sense. Yeah. Of course, I draw the way I see the world based on what's around me and based on the rules that I'm supposed to follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we could get into this in a lot more detail, but I had the same experience, which is when you start realizing that actually our belief systems, maybe even our beliefs in God,
yes,
you know,
yes,
come from the physical world around us. You know, right, when we switch from being hunter-gatherers and having an animistic view of the world, where everything around us has a spirit, to agriculture, then looking to the sky and sky gods, you know, it's like,
well, yeah, the monotheism like reflected the fact that there were like emperors and there were kings and there was like this hierarchy of society.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean,
which came from our ability to store energy and you know,
in a city
and crops and all that stuff. But, and that's like a really profound recognition. It also is very daunting because trying to change your infrastructure when the belief systems are not focused that way. And I think a lot of our listeners and people kind of in the environmental space would really, really resonate with this idea, because like here we are trying to convince people that, you know, we're trying to convince people you got to conserve, right?
Yeah.
We got to reduce, we've got to relocalize, we've got to scale back, you know, the human enterprise and in industrialism, and trying to change that infrastructure when the belief system around us is one of growth and progress. And
well, to give you an idea of how hard this is, imagine, okay, you got a local Pentecostal church, okay? And you decide you're going to show up one day and they're in the throes of their dancing and stuff like that. And you walk in, you say, hold on, people. Let me explain the material conditions that led to your belief in this God. And I want you to just back down a little bit and just rationally understand that this is, there's just no way.
Right.
You know, that's what I feel like.
What's interesting though, is I think that we can, because we do have to operate at a place of changing worldviews.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have this podcast at Post Carbon Institute that we produce called Holding the Fire, where we have conversations with indigenous leaders from around the world. And a lot of what they all talk about, and it's not like they're consulting one another, is that fundamental value shift and worldview shift.
Yeah.
So we do need that to happen, right?
Yeah.
But one of the ways that maybe we can do that is by pointing to the infrastructure of other communities and other ways of being, right? So like it's actual model or representation in the real world. It's not just a theoretical thing. People are living in a different way.
Sure.
Yeah. Which gets us to what we want to do in this season of the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. So this season, we're going to be looking at these different isms like industrialism, but we're going to use the Marvin Harris lens a little bit here. So like industrialism, a lot of that has to do with the infrastructure, the factories and
sure,
the, you know, the fuels and all
the
that.
The tractor can just farm way more efficiently from a time perspective and
right,
get a better return on finance than I can do by hand.
But then some of the other aspects of Crazy Town that we're going to try to escape, like capitalism, they're more in this realm of structure or rules and policies. And then you've also got other isms like individualism.
Yeah.
That's going to be more in the realm of beliefs and values. Like, you know, it's every man for himself kind of a thing. But we're introducing a new segment this season. We're going to call it something like the Marvin Harris Memorial Lens of Doom.
Lovely. And, it's got a nice ring
yeah,
to it.
And we're gonna address the ism through this lens. So let's just, for example, looking at consumerism, we'll talk about the infrastructure of consumerism, which mm-hmm, is stuff like big box stores and shopping malls and
right,
the existence of Amazon.com and ships and shipping containers.
Right. It's so easy to be a consumer.
Yeah.
They made it easy for you.
Yeah, yeah, huge infrastructure for it.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are the rules, the structure of it. You know, like you got to work a high-paying job, Jason, so that you can buy all that stuff off of Amazon that you're trying to acquire.
Mm-hmm. Or you can get a credit card going to debt.
If you don't have money, you can't buy stuff to survive. And you can't survive in this world without being a consumer.
Right. Yeah.
And then you get to culture and beliefs around consumerism. Like, of course, in America, if I can just own that one more thing, then I'll be happy.
Oh, I like the De Beers, all the marketing on a diamond is forever and 2 months salary. Yeah. They all just made that shit up.
That is the best. You have to spend 2 months of your salary to get a diamond ring because it fits anybody. You could be a grocery clerk. You could be a Wall Street banker.
It's equality in action. I mean, because, you know, you're treating everyone equally, right? It's not a certain dollar amount. It's, you know, it's 2 months of whatever you can afford.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
It's great.
But remember, this is about escape routes. So we're not going to spend too much time analyzing what's wrong with consumerism or our other isms. We get to move on.
And we're going to do stories of people who have escaped in some way, right? So through all this, like, who is doing something that's escaping this very ism we're covering? And so we might have our own personal stories that might be involved in this, or we might have stories of others.
Yeah. I mean, look how I left
that
guns
party.
And I got to the heroin guy out in the courtyard.
Yeah.
What an adventure.
What an escape.
We, of course, are going to keep our George Costanza Do the Opposite segment, right? And we're going to talk about different visions, right? Different visions for our infrastructure, a vision for different rules, visions for different beliefs, and then try to weave in some ideas for our listeners of what they could do to actually take action in each of these areas, each of these isms, right? To break from conformity and escape from crazy town.
Can I just say that I'm really excited that we're taking this on? We'll see. I mean, we're such curmudgeons. Can we actually be happy about some of these escape routes?
So but we have to escape pessimism, is
right.
what I'm saying.
Well, it's so much more opportunity for happiness than we had in our last few seasons.
This is going to be a real struggle.
It's going to be hard, but it's going to feel better.
I'm really nervous about this season. I don't know how we'll do. We're going to try to learn about ourselves and hopefully, you know, listeners will as well, because it's like, what is it about us or our people that makes them more and less likely to conform or, you know, to go along, to try to escape or not. And something that seems to be a factor is what's called the Big Five personality traits. And the abbreviation is OCEAN, which is great. It's so easy to remember.
Yeah.
So OCEAN, it stands for openness, conscientiousness. Sometimes I confabulate or something like that. Conscientiousness.
That's a big word too.
Yeah.
You got that one out.
Extroversion, agreeableness, or neuroticism.
Okay. So I found an online test where we can score ourselves on these OCEAN traits, the Big Five personality traits. So let's go take that now and we'll come back, compare results. And
are we actually going to share this with our audience?
Oh, you know we are.
Okay.
Okay.
This is a message to all you crazy townies out there. Sometimes Jason, Asher, and I wish you could be here in the room with us when we're riffing on eco-modernist nightmares, the end of capitalism, the collapse of civilization, and lines from Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. Since you can't be here, maybe we could still be in contact in another way. If you've got a comment about the show, or you want to throw some shade at us, or you've got a question,
or you have a suggestion of escape route stuff.
Yeah, right? Maybe you got a story of your own you want to share. Go over to Apple Podcasts or iTunes and leave us a review and write your comment there. In your comment, include your idea, whatever it is, and we'll think about sharing it in an episode.
How's this? I'll be back. Is that any good?
Oh my God, that's terrible.
You try it. You try it.
Get to the chopper! Okay, guys, I am excited to compare results and see how I trounced you in the positive categories.
Nice.
So
they should have tested for competitiveness because you would suck at it.
Right.
That is one of them. That's under, I think, under which one is
maybe
that?
Agreeableness.
Yeah.
Which one is assholishness? Because we'll see how we do on that one.
All right.
Okay, so the first one, O in OCEAN, is openness. Jason, give me the synopsis of what openness is.
You know, they tend to be imaginative and they tend to have a broad range of interests, very curious, eager to try new things and new experiences.
Okay, so on this test, you can score from 0% to 100% in each of these personality traits. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm the game show host. I get to, Jason, what was your openness score?
I was 73%.
Asher?
81%.
87.5%.
Oh, no.
I'm so open.
Yeah, because you have no opinions.
I know.
You have no personality.
Yeah, you're wishy-washy. Yeah, oh, we'll, just go along, go to get along.
We'll find out what these traits have to do with conformity.
All right.
We'll see who has egg on their face.
All right.
We'll see. We'll see. Okay, second one is conscientiousness.
No, you pronounced that wrong. How do you pronounce it, Jason?
Contrientious business list.
Whatever, dude. Okay. High levels of thoughtfulness, right? These people want to basically make sure they don't impose on others or upset other people. They plan ahead and think about how their behavior will impact other people.
Okay. Cher, what do you got?
I only got a 56.
Okay. Yeah. You don't care what anybody else thinks.
65.
65. Good. You guys are going to think I'm making this up. 69.
I believe you. You're the most conscientious.
I was just talking about the number.
There's
it's a Beavis and Butthead number.
There's 69. Some of the questions I didn't like, I got to say.
Yeah. But, yeah.
So far, it's Dietz 2, you guys, nothing. Wow. All right.
You're
extroversion.
Going down on the
extroversion is the E.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Excitable, sociable, talkative, assertive, outgoing, et cetera. Gain energy in social situations.
All right. I'll reveal first this time. Mm. I got a 46%.
Mm. Okay. Let's go reverse.
Okay. What do you, well, I don't, what's reverse?
No, he's next.
All right. Go ahead, Cher.
35%.
35. Wow.
Okay. Well, I was 73%.
Yeah. No surprise.
Yeah.
You are the most extroverted among us.
When I thought about this test, I was like, Jason's going to crush extroversion. I talked to you about being extrovert and you said, yeah, I'm not really.
Well, but I said I'm so-so, you know, I'm not a full-on.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. The A in ocean is agreeableness. What are the traits there?
Well, people are highly agreeable, tend to be very trusting, very kind, altruistic. They tend to be open with their affections, and they tend to be more cooperative and less competitive.
Okay, Jason, what do you got?
Oh, we're going.
What's your number?
Okay, I'm a 60%.
60% a share?
I'm exactly the same, 60%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you disagreeable fucks. I'm 77%.
I think you took this to try to score high.
Yeah, I was thinking about the test. How can I get the highest score on of gaming the test?
Yeah.
Okay, the final one is neuroticism.
That's
the N.
Characterized by sadness, moodiness, emotional instability. Tend to, you know, be a little more anxious and irritable.
I'm 103%. No, I'm 71%.
71%, Jason.
I'm 23%.
Wow. I'm splitting you guys. I'm 54%.
Wow. We're like opposite.
I know. Yeah, yeah.
Jason is so.
I'm neurotic. Dude, I'm Jewish. Okay. Yeah. It's like,
Hey, that's required. Right. And my dad's of Jewish descent. So I'm like kind of half Jewish. And Jason.
And you came over on the Mayfly.
Yeah.
So there we go. Yeah. It explains it.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, I don't feel like it's not like I'm carefree, but I guess I just don't think I carry it in every moment.
So here's where I'm going to feel a little bit better about myself. You know, at the end of this test, they give you this sort of like visual of where you land. And do you guys see this? So it puts me 71% empathetic idealist.
Hey, me too. I'm an 82%. I beat you again. Empathetic idealist.
And I'm a 60% analytical thinker. I'm only a 40% practical caretaker.
You probably didn't look at this, but based on the look on your face,
I didn't pay attention.
Yeah, we're empathetic idealists. You're an asinine jerk face. That's your personality.
You know, actually, I do remember that, and I was also an empathetic idealist. I remember that because it was only partially shown because they want you to download this and pay.
Want you to pay
so it was the top left quadrant thing.
The only thing we know, though, is that your score was lower than mine.
That's what we know. Not for for neuroticism, it was lower.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm
you're
glad.
Less neurotic and you're more extroverted. So
yeah.
People like you more.
Yeah.
I want friends who are not neurotic. We don't Cher, you don't need more neurotic people pumping up your neuroticism.
No, I really don't.
Okay, so this was all fun, but there was a recent study where there's been extensions of good old Professor Solomon Asch's experiments, mm-hmm. right? That, of course, conformity is an interesting social psychology topic, so people have been taking this and running with it more, and they've been looking at personality traits and conforming. And the trait that's key to overcoming conformity is openness.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're highly open, I guess, or if you could score high there, you're less likely to succumb to these bullshit picking the wrong line right. segment lengths. Right. And of course, maybe it helps you get to where you see Crazy Town for what it is. Now, we all scored high mm-hmm. in openness. I scored higher, of course.
I don't have an answer to this, but I bet it's something that you could actually be worked on.
Yeah, too. You can work on it.
Yeah, I don't think mm-hmm. it is like, oh no,
right.
I'm not open.
Well, I mean, I think that's one of the points. Like in extroversion, I used to be the shyest, most introverted person around. I would have never even done a podcast like this, but over the course of my life, that's been changing from practice, from my viewpoint, from, I don't know, just, you know, whatever. We change over time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm the one who always overcomplicates things, right? And I actually think that we're all on spectrums of this stuff. Like, I wouldn't necessarily call myself a pure introvert.
Yeah.
But I do get more drained in social situations yeah. than I'm, like, energized by them. But I'm also, I think a lot of people are surprised when I tell them I'm an introvert, because in certain situations, I'm very engaged.
Sure.
So I don't think we're all, like, black and white one thing or the other. And I think also the circumstances we're in. Yes. We might be less agreeable. We might be more neurotic. You know, we right. might be less conscientious or less open when we're in periods of stress in our lives.
Well, you know? I think when you take this test, it's going to change your answers. Totally. So yeah. there's going to be some – that'd be interesting to see.
And it's, I think, important to recognize that too, because this is where self-care, like doing things like mm-hmm. building your own emotional resilience – might actually help you score higher in a sense,
yeah.
you know, on these yeah. things.
I think this what's interesting about this study also is that it was testing different hypotheses, because this is a classic test and they wanted to understand, okay, there's variation in humans, and they wanted to figure out, unlike the original ASH test, what was it about human personality traits that may lead to conformity or not, or resist conformity? So openness was the only one that did, as opposed to things they also tested like intelligence or mm-hmm. or self-esteem. So the thought was, if you're intelligent, you're going to just say like, no, I can override any of this. I'm just going to use the data. No, didn't work. Self-esteem, the idea was you have a lot of confidence in your own ability and perception.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that either. So that's pretty fascinating.
That is.
The other thing that was really interesting though was that, and this was also part of Ash's original study, Ash also found that having one of the conspirators give the correct answer while the rest of the conspirators gave the incorrect answer dramatically lowered conformity. So, you know, what we're talking about, like, you know, a third of the time or 75% of the time, you messed up at least once or you conformed at least once. As long as somebody else was with you.
Yeah. Just one.
Just
person.
One. Yeah. Just 5 to 10% of the participants conformed to the rest of the group.
Well, if they just had one single other ally or person who yes. saw what they saw.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So here we are living in Crazy Town. Because you two want out, it's okay for me to get out too. I don't have to conform exactly. to it, right? I mean,
right.
I mean, that's seriously. And it says something, I think, to our listeners. Like, you could have some power. If you're that one
yeah.
who's saying, hey, this isn't right. This isn't the way we should be operating our society. That other person who's kind of been thinking it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had that happen to me before. I remember talking to, it was a doctor I was seeing, and they always ask questions, hey, what do you do for a living? And I said, well, I work for this think tank, and we believe that there are limits to growth. You can't have infinite economic growth on a finite planet. And she goes, yeah, I always kind of thought that, but everybody seemed to be just going with the program, and I never questioned it. Right. But I got to look into that. I was like, oh.
And you found out later she quit her job. She bought a homestead. She dropped out. She's
hey,
like,
you know, whatever.
She's a vet, just taking care of her
llamas.
Cattle.
Yeah.
There's two things about that I think are really profoundly important, at least for me, based on what you just shared, Jason. And that is for our listeners who probably feel the way that we do, mm-hmm. right? That you actually can play a role. You can have an influence. If you're in a position and courageous enough to sort of be the one to hold up your hand and say, this is crazy, this shouldn't be this way, or actually that's not right, just your single act may bring other people out mm-hmm. and it could tip things.
Yeah.
That's one thing. The other thing is finding others and not feeling alone, because we all need that.
Right.
And
yeah, back to belonging, right?
Exactly. So, you know, I think we have that with each other. I think we help each other sort of stay sane a little bit. It's part of what led us to want to do the podcast. And hopefully, many of our listeners have that in their own lives or can find that mm-hmm. in their lives, because it's hard to carry that completely on your own.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to turn us to something that is almost like a symptom of us being in this position. Okay. Right. We all scored so high on openness mm-hmm. that we're able to not conform to the mainstream programmed high energy modernity, infinite economic growth paradigm, mm-hmm. Myth of progress stuff. We're like, okay, that doesn't work. We need a new way. Well, when you look at the problems out there and you look at how severe they are, how bad we are on the climate front, how bad we are on the ecosystem breakdown front, the political polarization, there's kind of a logic to saying, well, we're fucked. There's nothing that we can do about this. And why do anything? It's probably too late. Forget it. I want to say, and I think what we want to say to listeners is, yeah, sure, maybe there is some logic there. That's a possibility. But there's really a lot of reason not to succumb to fatalism. Part of it is what you talked about before, Asher, that Holding the Fire podcast that we did with Indigenous people on, like, how do you get through these times? It's not by being fatalistic.
No, and it's also not by just conforming either. I mean, yeah. You could say that that's the easy path, but that's the path that's leading us to collective ruin. So it's somehow straddling those two extremes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found this quote by Howard Zinn that, you know, Howard Zinn is the famous professor who wrote The People's History of the United States. And yeah, this quote, he said, "To be hopeful in bad times is based on the fact that human history is not only of cruelty, but also of compassion, sacrifice, courage, kindness. If we see only the worst, it destroys our capacity to do something. If we remember those times and places where people have behaved magnificently, this gives us the energy to act. And if we do act, in however small a way, we don't have to wait for some grand utopian future. The future is an infinite succession of presents. And to live now, as we think human beings should live, in defiance of all that's bad around us, is itself a marvelous victory."
Yeah.
I don't know. That just really, I came across that quote recently. It struck me. It was like, yeah, live how you want the world to be, even if you find that it's not that way.
Yeah. I find that, you know, some of the happiest I am is when I am doing something that I know, you know, you don't know for sure if anything you can do is going to make that difference, right? You don't know. You're just, you are a small being on this vast universe and earth, but you don't know either way. So there's always a level of this uncertainty. And you know, what's nice about having the openness personality trait is that I think you probably are a little bit more comfortable with that uncertainty. You don't have to have a resolution. You could sort of say like, okay, I'm trying, and the outcome's to be determined. So taking action, if you don't know it's going to succeed, it almost doesn't matter. You would like it to succeed. You would like it to make a difference. But it's almost like, you know, the idea that it's that process itself that you have to be in love with. You have to care about the fact that you are doing something. And you have to enjoy that, what you're doing,
yeah.
Because it has to give you that positive feedback in the moment.
So sometimes I also try to look at it from like a mountaintop viewpoint. If I were up there and I could look back on my life and sort of just say, okay, what did I do? And giving into fatalism and saying, oh, well, we're all screwed and I'm not doing anything. Like, I think that person on the mountain would be really disappointed, right?
Yeah.
But if, even though things were going badly, if I were trying and I were putting my best foot forward and maybe trying to lead by example or, you know, whatever, like you were saying, even finding pleasant, fun activities that are still not, maybe not propping up the system as is, that guy on the mountain would be, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
That guy lived a life. That guy tried.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that would be pretty cool. The other possible way to do this would be to take action by going out and getting a pink-handled handgun and proving what a big man I am.
Which one should I get? If you already got the pink handle one, what am I going to get?
Hello Kitty.
Oh, do they have those?
I'm sure they do. Come on. Go to Amazon, man. They got everything.
Just take a personality test. find out which traits which match gun. Up which gun.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yeah, they've aligned. The gun personality test.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard and you want others to consider these issues, then please share Crazy Town with your friends. Hit that share button in your podcast app or just tell them face to face. Maybe you can start some much needed conversations and do some things together to get us out of Crazy Town. Thanks again for listening and sharing.
Hey, Crazy Townies, listen up. You want to make some big bucks and get your community up to speed on the topics we cover in Crazy Town? Well, we have a unique small business opportunity for you. Join the Crazy Town Escape Room Franchise, Inc. and set up an escape room in your community. The only way for your clients to get out is through a deep dive into the perils of overshoot, recognition of the false promise of eco-modernism, a rejection of consumerism, and a dismissal of the notion of human supremacy. Crazy Town escape rooms, a black hole for the American dream, and a supernova for sustainability.
And the coolest thing about it is all you have to do is dig a big hole and throw people in it.
Crazy Town, da, 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 Crazy Town.